Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Head on Fire is a Patreon-supported podcast. Supporters of the show get early access to ad-free episodes, a private Discord server, archives, and more. All benefits are offered on a sliding scale, so no matter your level of donation, you never miss out. If you like this show, consider supporting it with $1 a month or whatever you can at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Thanks, and enjoy the show. Do you remember having the talk with your parents? You know what talk I mean. The whole birds and the bees and flowers and trees and I don't know, whatever. The sex talk. We're talking about the sex talk. In fact, today's entire episode is going to be about the sex talk. So just up front, FYI, spoiler warning, content warning, whatever you need to hear. This particular episode is going to talk very frankly about sex education, and about the kinds of information that parents and kids and educators need to contend with when having good, frank, honest discussions around sex education. We're also going to be talking about the kinds of conversations that aren't happening and maybe why those conversations aren't happening. As you've probably gathered by now, if this is not your first episode of Head on Fire, I enjoy uncomfortable conversations. I really enjoy talking with somebody who cares deeply about a subject and unpacking something that makes the majority of us uncomfortable. And I can think of no more disquieting, uncomfortable topic than the intersection of sex and kids and education and our position as adults to try to make sure that kids have education and deciding what information is and is not appropriate for them to have at the various stages of their development. Kathleen Hema is a sex educator who has worked with children, adolescents, teens, young adults, and parents. She's taught undergraduate students both in the US and Australia on a variety of public health topics, but more often than not, it does come back to human sexuality. These days, Kathleen can be found on sites like TikTok and YouTube, providing her own brand of funny, frank, and honest discussions of sex education and how to have the talk. Here's Kathleen Hema. Kathleen Hema, thank you so much for being here on Head on Fire. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So for folks that haven't seen any of your TikTok videos or experienced your platform before, tell folks a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do.
Of course, yes. So I used to be a sex ed teacher. So I used to teach in the classroom. I used to teach primary, middle, high school age students. I also used to teach at the university level. I would teach a variety of different courses, one of them being human sexuality. But nowadays, like you said, I'm on TikTok, I'm on YouTube, I'm a sex educator for parents because I want to guide and advise parents on how to have the modern day sex talks. And I find that I do this, you know, through my YouTube and through my consultations on my website, through TikTok, through videos, because I noticed there was a disconnect. So what I noticed was is in the classroom, I would be with students and they would be asking questions. They would be engaged. I mean, nobody ever fell asleep in my classes, right? Like they were very interested in the topic I had come to discuss. The disconnect was with parents. And so I'll share a quick little story. So for example, I would have these things called parent nights. And so in the parent nights, the parents would be, I would go through the curriculum. I would let them know what their child's going to learn in the curriculum that I would teach. And so I would go through it all. So this one night in particular, I went through the curriculum. And it was a comprehensive curriculum. So we talked about everything. We talked about abstinence. We talked about birth control. We talked about condoms and how to put a condom on correctly. We talked about goals and dreams and how, you know, having sex, what are the consequences that could have possibly affect those goals and dreams, right? So we talked about a lot of stuff. At the end of the parent night, I say, any questions? And I remember this one dad in particular. He gets up. He was in a police officer's uniform. And he's like, ma'am, do you have kids? And at the time, I didn't have kids. So I said, no, I don't have kids. He goes, because if you had kids, you would not let them be in this program. And I was like, well, since I teach it, I think I would. And he's like, no, my 12-year-old is not interested in any of this sex stuff. Like, you are just going to inundate her with so much information that she just doesn't need. And I said, I appreciate your comment, but, you know, it is, you know, I can go through all the research, everything that I've shown you that says this is the right age to have these conversations and blah, blah, blah. And anyways, this school, it was mandatory. So all the kids were going to be it. He couldn't pull his kid out of the class. So now fast forward 3 weeks, I'm into this classroom and we've just finished our lesson on birth control. And this one student says, Miss Kathleen, quick question. How can I go about getting birth control if I don't want my parents to find out? And I was like, well, I encouraged her to talk to her parents and blah, blah, blah. And then she goes, yeah, my dad would never go for that. He would absolutely say, I can't get on birth control. And then I looked at her name and I looked at the parent site sheet and I was like, ah, okay. So your dad thought you're not interested in any of this stuff and you're asking me how to get birth control. So fast forward to now, I'm now not a teacher in the classroom anymore. I am a mom myself. I have two young kids and I just want to help parents. I want to help them see what I saw in the classroom, give them the information so that they can help in having these conversations. Because clearly that student wasn't talking to her parent and her parent wasn't talking to her, right?
It is amazing.
That's what I do.
It's amazing how quickly we seem to forget our own histories. Like I cannot be the only adult that remembers being a teenager. Like I can't be the only adult that remembers very clearly having, you know, thoughts about Billy, the Power Ranger at like a very young age and just like, what does this mean? Like, you know, just those mile markers of development. It's baffling because I remember as a kid thinking, oh, I need to remember this because adults act like this never happened to them. And I, as I became an adult, I was like, I just don't understand how my fellow adults are so precious with certain topics, sex being chief amongst them. That leads me actually into my first question. We will use literally any other language for sex and body parts rather than the correct terms, even while having the talk. In fact, we even call it the talk. Everybody knows what the talk means instead of like the sex talk. That's mm-hmm. how we get metaphorical language, like the birds and the bees, or being told that girls have flowers in their pants for some reason. Why do you think we are so uncomfortable talking about sex, and how do we overcome it? How do we get comfortable with that discomfort?
That's a great question, right? So now, this isn't my opinion. There is research to back this up. I can't think of the research author's name at the moment, but there is research that it looked at and it studied and it asked a ton of adults and parents, why are you uncomfortable with the sex talk? Like, why aren't you having the sex talks with your kids? And I remember the answers of it. So one of them, the main one, was being that they just didn't have the sex talk when they were growing up. So they don't have a reference, right? They don't have, like, how did that go? How did it feel when I remember my parents talking it to me? So they just didn't have it. Or they didn't have sex education at all in school. So that they're just unsure of timings. When am I supposed to say this? Or when am I supposed to say that? The other thing was, parents are afraid to mess it up. They're afraid, I was going to say a bad word, but they're afraid to mess it up. They're afraid they're going to say either too much information, or they're not going to say the right thing, or they might confuse them, or they might ruin their childhood, right? Like, and so they're afraid of what to say. So I think that discomfort stems from this whole lack of there being the conversation, people guiding them, advising them, letting them know as parents, you're not going to mess it up if you answer a sex question that your kid has come to you and asked, right? And so that's what I'm trying to do, is because I do believe that a lot of the parents I speak to, they want to have these conversations. They actually are like, okay, so now that I've figured out I've got to say penis and I've got to say vagina, okay, how, when do I say that? When do I say that? Well, I'm say it when you're changing their diapers. Say it when they're going to, when you're starting to potty train, right? Say it so it becomes normalized in the home, right? And help yourself say, okay, if I can say just penis and vagina as, did you clean your penis? Did you clean your vulva? You know, are you making sure you're wiping your vulva from front to, you know, if you're saying all those things, then it's going to be easier to talk about, you know, the penis going into the vagina later on, right? Like, you know, it's kind of like this helping you of layering of information. We're going to start here and we'll build you up to here. That makes
Does
sense.
This kind of sidestepping, like when you got a student into your classroom, but what age did you teach when you taught in, I mean, obviously undergrad, you're teaching legal adults, but when you were teaching kids, what age were you teaching?
So I taught high schoolers, 9, 10, 11th grade. Mm-hmm. So that would be what, 14, 15, 16. Mm-hmm. I taught middle school, and middle school was like the bulk of it. And then I also taught in the primary schools, but the primary school was really just around 4th and 5th grade. There wasn't anything earlier than that. So in the state I was teaching, there was mandated sex education, but it wasn't, it said it had to be medically accurate. And so I did go in teaching medically accurate sex ed, but the primary school age that I would teach was very limited, because it was up to the teacher. The mm-hmm. teacher got to decide if they wanted to have that sex ed. But then the middle school and the high school was, they needed to have something.
Did you find that sort of sidestep language? Did you find 11th graders coming in and saying, oh, my flower, my birds and my bees? Not like, are you finding that still existing in conversation? Like, does that filter through? Does that help or hurt conversation?
Oh my God. Do you know how many times somebody would say, like, when his, you know, member.
When his, you know, exactly.
Her. Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't in high school. It was college students. So many of my college students would be just like, you know, uncomfortable saying you know what, some of them, it was the first time they were hearing or seeing the reproductive system. Some of them didn't have sex ed. They came from out of state. So they were in my class as undergrads, usually freshmen or sophomores. And yeah, they were just now getting sex ed in their college level human sexuality class. Yeah.
So adults have made discussing sex into a political issue, either directly or indirectly. Speaking of kids who didn't grow up with it, I know in my home state of Texas, our access to sex education was non-existent. There is no requirement to teach sex ed. And still to this day, I Googled it right before I came on and thought, if laws have changed. Of course they haven't, but I thought I would check. They have not. If a school does teach it, they must teach abstinence education, that abstinence is the way to go. Coincidentally, Texas has enjoyed one of the nation's highest teen pregnancy rates for decades, very frequently taking the number one spot. Those two things can't possibly have anything to do with each other, but I grew up with zero sex ed. There were some very embarrassing conversations that I had with friends in college and into my adult years because I did not know basics at all. Nothing. This creates a number of questions for me. How do you create a sex positive or sex informed environment at home? Do you encourage parents to speak to educators, even though the school itself can't condone sex education? And what are some of the harms of abstinence only education?
That's a lot.
I know. We'll take it point by point. Don't worry. I've got bullet points. We'll go back.
All right.
So how do you create a sex positive or sex informed environment at home?
That's great. So one thing I tell parents is you're the parent and you have this human being that you have to take care of, and you're going to nourish and nurture, and you're going to do a lot of work with, right? You're like, it's amazing being a parent myself. Like they literally know nothing. They know nothing. So you're teaching them everything. And so I try and tell parents that when it comes to talking about sex in the home, it's going to be different, slightly different, because you're going to include your values. Okay. When I was a sex ed teacher in the classroom, I would teach and I would simply provide the factual, medically accurate information in the manner that it was supposed to be delivered, especially when it was like I'm teaching middle school or high school, I'm teaching to the curriculum and the core curriculum for that grade level. Right. Now, as a parent, right, like, okay, let me give you an example. Let's say in the classroom, a student asks me, what's the right age to have sex? If they were to ask me that question and I was in the classroom, let's say it's in high school, and this was a common question I did get asked. And I would say, as a teacher, you know, there's the legal age of consent, and this is what it is. When considering when to have sex, you need to think about, you know, the mental, emotional, physical considerations that could occur. Think about the consequences, both positive and negative. And think about, are you ready to deal with both positive and negative consequences? And how could you prevent any of those negative consequences? And that would be it. I can't share my value. I can't share my personal, my religious, or my cultural belief around the right age to have sex. But as a parent, and this is what I tell parents all the time, you can share your values. And I think sharing your values is important, but you have to do it after you cover all that factual information first, after you tell them the legal age, after you tell them the considerations, after you talk about the information in a factual way, in an age-appropriate way, then share your values. You say, we believe, if you're co-parenting, that the right age to have sex is blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, we believe, or I believe the right age to have sex is, you know, when you're in a committed relationship or when you're married or when you're 32, right? Whatever you want to say, then you say it. And I think that's where it gets lost a lot of times is people jump to the values part of it first. And if we say, okay, everyone's going to have different values, but here's the real nuts and bolts of what we want to make sure everybody knows, they know how to take care of their sexual health. And if we focused on that, I think we would do a lot better in educating our youth.
You have been in those situations. You referenced it at the top of this interview, where parents want to be very involved, or at least want to, I don't know about involved. They want to give you their opinions on the work that you do. And that has been a pretty hot button issue. I mean, I talked to Tell Williams earlier this year, you know, Mr. Williams pre-K, about some of the challenges of being in the classroom with parents that want to tell you how to do your job rather than trying to work with you to educate their child. How do parents that want to be involved in these discussions, maybe even be disquieted, maybe even parents that are uncomfortable with the material, how do parents and teachers come together, whether or not the school condones sex education? Is there a way to have that conversation that benefits the child?
That's a good question. It's really, it's one of those things where if you take a step back and you say, okay, what questions does the kid have, right? Mm-hmm. Are they asking any questions? Do they even feel safe or comfortable to ask questions? Have we created an environment where we're turning them off? Like, are we saying you can't ask that yet, or that's girl stuff, or that's boy stuff, or if we're being binary, whatever we're doing, are we creating an environment? So I always tell parents, think about the home environment that you're creating. So if your kid comes to you with a question and you don't know how to answer it, or you're caught off guard by it, simply say, "That's a great question. And I don't know how to answer it right now, but I'll find out and I'll get back to you," right? Like just let them know that I'm happy you came to me with that question. You know, your education is important to me. I don't want to give you misinformation. And once I find out the answer, we're going to have this discussion. And then you get back to them. That's the whole way of making this all work, right? Is getting back to them. So I think if we focus it on that kids are curious. And like you said at the beginning as well, there's a lot of things like adults tend to forget that we were like when we were, you know, kids and teens. You know, a primary age kid, a kid who's 3, 4, 5, they're like, why does that person have a penis? And why do they not, right? Or why is she feeding the baby with her breasts and that one with a bottle, right? Like, they're just trying to make sense of them. And if we simply just focus on answering their question in a factual way, we can help them to understand the world around them.
What's your experience with abstinence-only education? Obviously, you've dealt with students from those environments. What are your views on abstinence-only education?
Well, abstinence-only education, when it is, so there's a few different types of abstinence-only education, right? You got abstinence-only until marriage. You've got abstinence-only. So abstinence-only until marriage, they usually are not allowed to talk regarding any sort of birth control or condoms or anything like that. And they can only focus on sex is only acceptable when you are married, right? So you got abstinence only at marriage. Then you got abstinence only. And then you got abstinence based. And then you got like comprehensive. So abstinence only is supposed to be, hey, abstinence is the main way to prevent any negative consequences from happening. But if the kids ask you a question around condoms or birth control, you can answer it and you can say, you know, there are condoms and there's birth control, there's ways to prevent it. And then you got abstinence based, which means that every time you talk about a way to prevent a pregnancy or an STI, or any of the negative emotional consequences of sex from happening, you always say, what could be the best way to prevent this from happening? Abstinence. And then if you do decide to have sex, then condoms or birth control or whatever. So you have all these different levels of abstinence. So the runner home here is don't have sex in all of those levels. But if you were just to simply talk to kids and explain sex, and the way I do it is the way I do it in my videos is have a base layer of information, and then you're building upon that information and you're building upon that information. If you talk to them and you tell them these base informations and you say, hey, you know, this is what sex is, and we're going to talk about vaginal, we're going to talk about anal, we're going to talk about oral, we're going to talk about all these, you know, STDs that could happen, but we're also going to talk about it can be pleasurable because that's why most people do it. And I'm going to answer your questions and I'm going to treat you like a person because I know you have questions. And if you go through that, you'll find out that they say, that's a lot. That's a lot of information. And you know what? I didn't realize sex was that much. You know what? I don't have time for all of that. Right? Like,
who does? Who does?
The emotional consequences. And they literally say, you know what? I didn't realize. And that's what I noticed in my middle school programs that I would do with 11 and 12 year olds. That's what their takeaway at the end of the program was when I was honest with them and said, hey, you know, people do have sex because it feels good. But here's all the other things that can happen, right? And even if you go through all of the precautions, even this could happen, right? Like, and they're like, you know what? I'm just not ready to deal with any of that. I didn't realize that. So yeah, so I think abstinence has its place, but I think if you approach it in a way of providing them with medically accurate information, they'll tend to be like, abstinence makes sense, right now for me, right? You know, and maybe abstinence makes sense later on as well. Like, I know when I was trying to finish my like master's thesis, it was like, I need to focus here. Like, I don't have time for the potential of a baby to pop out. You know, so I think if you approach it as it's abstinence can be used at certain points of your life when you need, and when you don't want to deal with all of that stuff, that's acceptable to do. But here's how you can prevent some of that stuff if you do decide to have sex.
STIs carry a lot of stigma for marginalized communities, such as LGBTQ folks, African Americans. Mm-hmm. I know in the gay community in the early 2000s, there was a real gross question that people would ask, are you clean? To inquire whether somebody had HIV, are you clean? You'd see that on dating sites. But we've come a long way to create neutrality in these spaces and acceptance with STIs, but there is still a lot further to go. How do we discuss STIs in a stigma-free way? And further, do you have any advice for people who do currently maybe need to do some unpacking on their attachment of morality or fear to an STI diagnosis?
You know what? I haven't talked about STIs in a really long time.
I dug through your videos.
Yes, this is fantastic. Yes. So when you, most parents, most adults, when they talk to kids about sex, it is don't do it so you don't get an STI, right? Like the way to prevent yourself from getting an STI is to not have sex at all. And yes, that is true. But at the same time, majority of people are going to have sex. So how do you give them the skills and give them the confidence to be able to have conversations with potential partners in a way that, first of all, keeps everybody's sexual health healthy and makes them take ownership and responsibility on their sexual health? How do you do that? And so that is one of the things, I may be kind of just veering off your question just a little bit. It's one of the things that I try and tell parents is your responsibility here is like, when you have a young baby, you're at the doctor's all the time. You're asking about every single thing. Like this, like, you know, little runny nose, you're asking about it. You know, they have a cough, you're asking if, you know, what it is. You're every little thing you're at the doctor is asking. And then as they start to get older, you start to not see the doctor as much. You don't need as many immunizations. You know, their colds are the common cold and you just kind of keep going on. And then we send them out into the world and we haven't told them, how do you make an appointment? How do you talk to a doctor? How do you talk about issues that may feel uncomfortable or you may feel embarrassed about? And if we were to continue that education around, you know, when you go to the doctor, when you were a baby, I asked about your poo all the time. I wanted to make sure you were like, everything was good. You'd be surprised how much poo talk there is when you have your baby for the first time. But yeah, you do that. And so I think one of the things with STIs and with kids and with the talk is helping them to develop this not stigma around it, but it's part of taking care of your health. You may get one. This is how you have to deal with it if you do. Here is how you can prevent the potential of getting it. Here's how you can have a conversation with someone. You're right. You don't want to shame them. That's not what the goal is. If you're thinking about having sex with somebody, you're going to be rude to them, right? Like that's, you know, not. So it's about building this level of understanding about their body and their sexual health. And I think a lot of times parents, when I say, you know, once you get past explaining what is sex, you've got a lot more talks coming. So you got to kind of tell them what sex is, and then we got to move on because there's a lot more to cover.
I really appreciated that, you know, on your website, you talk about how the talk is not a one-time thing and how it is a series of just ongoing conversations that you are going to want to have, that your child is going to want to have, that are going to come in and out of your relationship forever and ever and ever, probably, if you build the right level of trust. I think that it's also really important for people who have sex all the way up into adulthood. You know, we just saw some really homophobic stuff with monkeypox in the last year, and the conflation of it as an STI, even though it is not an STI. And a lot of miseducation, a lot of fear regarding that. So I think it's really important for these kinds of conversations to continue and for that stigma to continually be removed from having it, for morality to be removed from diagnosis, from the conversation itself. There seems to be just this, I don't know, air about talking about these things that, like, if you even want access to the information, there must be something wrong with you.
Yes, yeah, definitely, yeah.
I feel like I have to ask this question directly, as it is the main
Okay.
point brought up by all sorts of folks, despite political affiliation. Does teaching kids about sex increase their likelihood of having sex?
Think you know the answer to
Oh, I know the answer, but here's the thing.
that.
If I do not ask that, someone listening to this show is gonna come away and say, "Well, I don't want to tell my 9-year-old about sex because then they're gonna want to go out and have baby sex, and I don't want my baby to have baby sex." And I'm like, I don't like, so I just need to ask so that I can have it in this audio recording. It's going out to listeners around the world.
Yes, no, definitely. Please, I'm glad you asked that question. That's a great question. I'm really glad you came to me with that question because I know the answer to that question. And the research, the overwhelming research, has shown that teaching kids age-appropriate sex ed, providing information around contraception and birth control, and providing a lesson on how to use a condom correctly does not encourage sexual activity any sooner. The research shows that it actually will delay initiation, which I have seen firsthand in it, like kids coming up to me afterwards, just telling me they learned all this stuff and didn't know it, so they're just don't want to deal with it right now. It also, in when you teach comprehensive, when you have the condom, the birth control, that kind of stuff, and you provide them with information about it, actually increases their chances of protected sex the first time they actually go to have sex, whenever that is. So this idea that if you talk about sex or you talk about any sexual topic with a child, that they're just going to want to do it. It's been proven that is not how it goes. They most of the time, the reaction when you tell a 8-year-old and you explain what is sex is, ew, who does that? Like that is the reaction you'll get. When I would tell students what oral sex was, they were like, ah, gross. And it is. That is the normal reaction because they haven't had the concept at that age of sex being pleasurable. And that's going to come later on when they go through puberty. And that's when they're going to have that idea and understanding. So yeah, no, it's been proven. It's not, doesn't.
Okay, so we are all of us now listening to this, we are all good with sex education. We are all pro sex education. Everybody is good with it. At what age does that begin, and what does that education look like?
Oh, excellent question. So yes, when do you start the sex talks? Whew, yes. You start now. If you are a parent and you have a kid, you start now. I don't care what age your kid is, you start now. And I say that in an almost like jokingly way, but it's true. If you have a kid that's just been born, right, you start making yourself comfortable when you go to change their diaper. Say I'm wiping your anus and I'm wiping your scrotum and I'm making sure that there's nothing going to irritate your skin from fecal matter or from urine, right? Like, and you start saying the words and you start to get comfortable in that. You age appropriate sex ed, right? Like I hear a lot of well-intentioned journalists and organizations and even myself say start early, start often, start talking with your kid. but how and why and when do I do that? And so, yeah, so there is this I use the term age appropriate, but a lot of parents don't know what that means. And that's why in my videos, I really go through and I try to categorize the most common questions that kids ask in the primary age for ages 4, 5, and 6. In the intermediate age, 7, 8, and 9, right? And in the middle school and high school, because if parents have an idea of, okay, so my kid's gonna probably ask me where babies come from around 3 or 4 or 5 years old. Okay.
Can I just, I'm so sorry to interrupt. I just need to say, I am so gay and have been so gay for so long that I completely forgot that for so many people, the conversation is where do babies come from? That didn't even enter my head. I was like, yep, sex for pleasure. Uh-huh. Yep. Sex, blah, blah, blah. Yep. Fine. All of that. Where do babies come from? What? Sorry. I just, yep. Okay. Maybe I do forget what it's like to be a kid. Wait, I wasn't a straight kid becoming it. I was like, never mind. Sorry. I just, wow. Anyways, have fun with that one.
but that's the thing. Even if you do have a kid, the thing is they're going to ask it. They're going to see this brand new baby. They're going to be like, where did this baby come from? Right? Like it's yep. just.
The store. I got it from
Don't
Aldi.
Don't say that, Dawn. Do not no. say that.
Well, if I got one, I had to buy it somewhere is all I'm saying. So, anyways, yes. please yes. continue no. to apologize.
No. It's all good. It's hilarious. Excuse me. So there is that. So what I try and do is I try and tell parents what is age appropriate for the age ranges. And so if your kid is in this age range, these are the common questions. These are the things that they'll probably ask or do. And it's something that you should be aware of. So you know, how do you want to answer it? What's your value around it? Are you uncomfortable with something in that answer? And help yourself and prepare yourself for that talk. And so that way you kind of know that if my kid reaches the next age range and they never asked one or two or three or all of those questions, something's up. Because I'll tell you, when you become a parent, you get this app on your phone and it has all the developmental milestones of your kid. And your baby's just been born and you're like, okay, week one, what do they need to do? Tummy time, 20 minutes every day. Okay, are they lifting their neck, right? Like, And by the time they're, 5 months old, are they stacking 5 blocks? Are they hopping on 1 foot by the time they're 2 years old? Right. Like, you are addicted to this developmental milestones app to make sure your kid
Can
is meeting
these.
I hop
on 1 foot for that long? I don't
You just, you do. And so I think as parents, we were so programmed in the early days to make sure that our kid is meeting all of those things, making sure that they're healthy and they're able to do that. Because if they're not, we're like, ooh, is there a problem? Is there a disability? Is there an additional need? Is there something I need to talk to my pediatrician about? And as they get older, right, so that's why I have the age ranges. Is that because I think as a parent, it's helpful. It says, okay, this is what I should be talking about. And when my kid asks me, why is my penis hard? You don't freak out, right? And you can say, okay, yes, that's normal. You're touching your body, you see your body, you're wondering why this is happening, and here's how I can answer that question.
Is that, once again, I'm asking a question that I feel like has already been answered, but I do want to ask it very directly because it does address some fears and trepidations that people have, no matter their political affiliation, no matter whatever. Is there such a thing as too young to begin having these discussions?
And I think that plays into the age appropriateness, mm-hmm. right? And doing that. So there is, so when I tell parents, like, you want to create an environment in the home that is safe, that is warm, that's supported, that their child feels connected, right? When your child feels connected to the home, right, they aren't going to go out and search for other people to answer their questions because they feel like they can come to you and they can ask you things. And developing that warm and supportive home environment is very important. And when it comes to the sex talks, a lot of parents may say, oh my God, my kid is asking, I caught one of the ones that most parents reach out to me about is like, my kid was masturbating. They're only like 5 years old, right? They, you know, like, they're like, oh my God. And I'm like, actually, it's very, very common. And, and here's why it's so common. And I'll go through that information with them. I'll let them know. And by the end of it, they're like, I didn't know this. And I was like, yeah, none of us did, right? Like the parents, like, it's not in our developmental milestones, app. So, they're not telling us these information. They're not telling us this stuff, but there are some times when if they ask a question or they're doing something that could be a sign of abuse, that could be a sign of they've been exposed to something that at their age, they really shouldn't have been exposed to. And those are things to be aware of, because a lot of the sex talks and what I try and tell parents is by providing this information, you're giving them the knowledge and information and eventually the skills, right, to be able to protect their health and hopefully prevent any child sexual abuse. And as much as that is uncomfortable for a lot of people to talk about, it's one of the things that comes up a lot from students I've had in the past to commenters talking to me is just saying like, yes, you should be talking about this. If I had the words to explain this, I would have been able to have, you know, stopped this abuse from happening. So yes, in a roundabout way, I think I'm answering your question that this is why I have playlists on my YouTube channel geared at different ages. Mm-hmm. So parents can go to that playlist and say, ah, okay, so this is the general, right, normal questions.
Not every
that are
question,
asked.
The conversation you're having with an 18-year-old is not the conversation you're having with a 6-year-old.
Exactly,
they don't need to,
right,
be. That 6-year-old has very different kinds of questions and different needs and different, yes, access to information.
Exactly. And the way I'm talking about consent with my 3-year-old when I'm saying, may I give you a kiss, mm-hmm, or, you know, will you come over here and sit on my lap while I read you a book? Right. It's, I'm giving her the opportunity to say no to me and then I'm respecting it. It's going to be very different from the sexual consent conversation I have with my 14-year-old. So, I've put a foundation there, mm-hmm, earlier. Right. And that I'm going to be building upon with consent. And it's going to be in all the conversations building up to this, how do you know somebody is consenting to sexual activity? And how do you ask for consent? How do you gauge consent and stuff like that?
You know, something that you just said reminded me, we get so uncomfortable, disquieted by the idea that, oh, our kids are masturbating. Oh, our kids are experimenting with certain things or touching themselves and might be touching others. And what's interesting is how when you even start to have these conversations or you want to make yourself informed, I do keep coming back to this idea that people tell you, oh, well, you're sexualizing a 6-year-old, you're sexualizing, mm-hmm, a 9-year-old. And it's like, well, I'm not sexualizing them. I'm acknowledging that something is happening with them. And I want to be in a position to help them through it, to be a resource for them if I can, and to recognize, like you said, potential harm or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we're all sexual beings. And mm-hmm, I think this is one of the things a lot of parents, especially parents of children with disabilities, come to me and I have a consultations with them and they're just like, you know, my child who is on the spectrum or my child who, you know, has a lot of handicaps in physical ways, and they are expressing this need of, you know, they're constantly wanting to masturbate or get erections. And I'm trying to, how do I go about navigating this? And I'm telling them, you know, how do I do that? Right. Like, and so, yeah, so it's going to be a little bit different, for all kids, right? Like I give you these age ranges and I give you this information. It doesn't mean that it's 100% this is what's going to happen. You're not every 8 year old is going to ask what is sex at eight, right? And right in the middle of the age range. It might be a little bit before, it might be a little bit later. It depends on like, you know, are their sibling, are they the firstborn? Are they number six of seven, right? Like, like they're going to hear different things. And so, yeah, so I think when it comes to helping parents understand we're all sexual beings, it doesn't mean that we all want to have sex at, you know, early on, but it does mean that we want that intimacy. Mm-hmm. We want to be touched and cuddled. Like every kid wants to have that cuddle. And I love when they want to read books and, you know, it's kind of chilly and we get under the blanket, you know, it's warm and it feels safe, and you're creating that. And so sex, when you think about sexuality, right, I always go back and I can always go into lecture mode about the five circles of sexuality and stuff like that, but you have all these different areas, right? And the act of sex is just one, and then you've got intimacy, you've got, you know, vulnerability, that ability to say I love you to someone and you don't know what they're going to say back, right? Like you have that risk taking. And yeah. And then you have identity and how you perceive yourself and your orientation and your gender and how you want to express yourself to the outside world and how you want to express your sexuality. So all of these things are encompassing. And if we step back and say, okay, that's a lot to talk about. I got to get some other talks out of the way if I'm going to have that talk with my kid, you know, as they're entering high school. Right, because that's that time of expression and risk, you know, that time of like trying to figure out what am I going to present to the world, right? And I think one of the things that I did a lot was when it comes to that idea of sexuality and everyone's a sexual being, when you kind of step back and say we're sexual beings from the moment we're born until the day we die. And how that can be different for everybody, but we're not educating our kids about that. We're missing a huge aspect of our lives.
Speaking of chunks of the human experience that are left out of these conversations, one of the things that I love most about your platform is it goes beyond the basic heteronormative discussion of sex. How can parents best handle the sex talk with their LGBTQ plus children or with children who have yet to affirm any specific sexual orientation?
Yeah, no, I'm so glad that you noticed that about my videos and my TikToks is because, yeah, it is so important. I mean, the rates of depression amongst LGBTQ, the rates of suicide, it is extremely high. And it's not right. I mean, the fact that we have this segment of the population that feels so uncomfortable to share who they are, I think it's getting slightly better than it was 20 years ago, than it was 50 years ago, but we're still not at a good point. We're still not there. It's still pretty bad statistics.
For any progress that we've made, seeing our queer youth be so politicized these days is now seeing those rates of depression and suicide start going back up again. And it's harrowing.
Yes. No, it's not. Yeah. So I try and tell parents, look, when you have that baby, right, you have no idea what their sexual orientation is. You have no idea what their gender is, right? You have an idea of what their reproductive organs are, but you don't know what their gender is. When I try to like say, you're going to be with this baby and you're going to teach them and talk to them, think about how you're having those conversations. Think about how you're saying to them, well, sex is, and if you only focus on penis and vagina, if they're not that orientation, right, you shut them down, right? So if you eliminate that and you say there are different ways people have sex and here are some ways that I want to make sure that you're aware, because these are very considered high risk behaviors because they spread the most STIs or they have the most rates of infection if done done without protection, right? Like if you talk about it in that way, right, then they'll clue in with what they're being told, right? Or what they'll identify with the area of the talk that you're having. So I think parents just need to kind of step back and say, you know what, I made this baby or this baby is mine, but it's its own person. And I can't wait to meet this person. Mm-hmm. And I want them to have all the information so that whatever they want to share with me, I've given them information that I know that they can succeed with. When I talk to parents and I say them, and sometimes parents are like, well, you know, with my religion, it's not okay. I was like, put that aside, right? Put that aside, because first you got to focus on giving them factual information first so that they can take care of their health. Then you can share with them your religious beliefs. And here's the one thing. A lot of times we forget that our kids are going to develop their own belief system. It may align with the parents' beliefs. It may, or it may not, right? So what you share with them, you want to make sure that they're getting information for to protect themselves and their health, and then share their beliefs. And maybe they say, yeah, your belief is really good, Mom. I like that. Or they say, you know what? I don't think I like that, right? Like, and how are you going to, are you just going to say, well, if you don't believe what I believe, then we're no longer, you know, right? Like, how are you going to do that? And I think for a lot of, when I talk to parents, I have some friends who have transgender children, and, you know, they still have this pushback from other people in their community who still say the wrong pronouns, and they're still correcting. And they're just like, you know, when they step back and they say, I'm supporting my child. My child is mm-hmm. here. This is what they're telling me, and I'm supporting them, and I am taking care of them because I know what happens, and I've seen the statistics if I don't. And so, yeah. So I think it is about taking that step back.
I would rather have a happy, alive child than...
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. The disabled community equally gets left out of sex education, but people with both physical and mental disabilities have sex. Mm-hmm. What can parents or educators do to be best informed of these specific needs?
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, I have talked a little bit about disability, children with disabilities or special needs on my videos, excuse me. I think what's really hard is to make a generic video that encompasses everything. It's really, mm-hmm. really hard because there are so many nuances mm-hmm. when it comes to different disabilities and different capabilities and all of those things. So I think one of the things that I try to tell parents is when it comes to including your child in these talks is to recognize first that they're a sexual being. And they're going to have feelings, and that in every aspect, you're teaching them life skills. You're trying to teach them to be able to go to the bathroom on their own. You're trying to teach them to be able to cook for themselves. You're trying to teach them life skills so that they have some semblance of independence, depending on their abilities. And sex education is a part of that. So, you know, teaching them the social norms around where does one take their clothes off, or teaching them the social, you know, the behaviors that are acceptable to do in public and not is very important with the children. And I think for the majority of individuals, they are capable of learning sex education. It's just the systems that we have in place aren't providing it, right? They're just the school systems and the ways that we have set things up. We've just kind of said, sex is just something we're not going to talk about with that population because it gets a little messy.
And yeah, because we infantilize disabled people.
Well, very true. Yes. So you have to have these conversations, and we have to include it as part of life skills, as part of growing, even though there may be different aspects to that. And the rates again, of sexually abused children with a disability are very high. The rates of sexually assaulted adults with disabilities, very high, because we're not doing the proper and sufficient sex education.
Something that you said earlier reminds me of a very specific question that one of my listeners requested that I ask. So I wanted to ask. She tells me that she's homeschooling. She homeschools her kids. So she's really excited for this particular interview because she's about to have some of these lessons, and she's glad to have you as a resource. But one of her kids is autistic. And she's wondering how to best address sex education for neurodivergent learners whose emotional maturity and physical maturity are not quite aligned. People that might be more physically mature than they are emotionally mature, or vice versa. Do you have any advice for parents going through that specific educational roadblock?
Yes. Yes. No, no, that's very good. The fact that she's already saying, I want to make sure that they have this sex education, I commend her 100% because that's excellent. A lot of parents say, I'm just going to, you know, my kid's not interested in that because they're infantilizing the child, right? Like, there is a lot, everybody has sexual feelings and those kinds of things. So it's very important that they, Commander, 100%. That's excellent. So step one done. Now moving on to how do you have these conversations in a way. A lot of the time with neurodivergent children, and I'm going to speak generally, I don't know specifically the age and all that stuff. So I'm just going to speak very, very general here is you want to make sure that you're providing the information in a clear and concise manner. You don't want to use euphemisms. You want to be clear with what you're saying. Because when it comes to those neurodivergent, if they hear the same message said exactly the same way, it tends to stick more than if you use euphemisms or, you know, can't think
metaphors
of the other word at the
moment.
Metaphors, yeah. Exactly, yes.
No birds and bees, because then they're going to be looking for birds and bees and wondering why. Are we going to a pet store?
Yes. So yes, you want to be clear. Repetition is really good with this population, and being very specific where this is acceptable to do, where this is not acceptable to do. And one of the great areas that I want to make a video, I haven't quite hashed it out yet, is consent, teaching them the nuance of consent, because a lot of times they hear yes, but then they don't understand all the what they're seeing, right? So like when I talk about understanding nonverbal consent as well as verbal consent and checking in with the person, right? Like a lot of times with neurodivergent children, they say, oh, well, they said yes, but then later on it was, I don't want to do that. But that wasn't a no to them. It was right? Like it gets a little unclear, especially when they're very much like, this is what I heard, this is that, and this is why we're continuing to do that. So it's really hard to teach nonverbal consent and nonverbal like understanding and nuance of a sexual situation. It's hard for people who are not neurodivergent to understand, are you into me right now? Are we going ahead with this, right? If you're not communicating clearly.
It's confusing for everyone. Especially people that take things literally, but everyone also.
Yes.
Everyone.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So it's really, really hard.
I want to respect your time, and I know that we are coming up on it, but I have to ask, because you have been in some classrooms with some kids, and I'm sure you've heard some things. So I know that everybody's heard like all the legendary stories of people getting pregnant because they thought you couldn't get pregnant if you had sex in a pool or something. They thought chlorine killed it. What's the wildest, most unhinged? Like, what's the weirdest theory about sex you've ever heard? What's just the what's the one that you just went back home and you just stared at the wall for 30 minutes going, how did this get out there?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh my gosh. So many stories. And I'm trying to think of the one that comes to mind, because it was, I'll tell you this one. So I was teaching high school, high school class, where I was only in there for about a week. So sometimes a lot of these like sex eds, it's just like they want you to come in and just hit them with the basics,
sure.
right? Like there's no time for relationships.
Penis, vagina,
and,
baby,
STI,
death.
Just STIs. Basics, I can check that off. And the teacher is happy that that's been taught. So I just did one of those basic lessons. And in that basic lesson at the high school age, I did a condom demonstration. And in that condom demonstration, I always go through and I always say at the end, after the activity has been completed and the condom has been removed, where do you want to throw this? And students will usually say, in the trash can. And I'll be like, yes, very good. Always in the trash can. You never want to throw this in the toilet. It will clog your toilet and the plumber will come over and bring these out and they will say, this is what will clog your toilet. And I remember it to this day, this poor kid, in the front row, as I'm saying that, do not put it in the toilet. He just goes white. And he's just going, just does one of these like head to the hand things. And I'm like, oh no, how many condoms has he flushed down the toilet? Right? And it's just one of those things. And so I basically just say, all right, I don't bring any attention to him at the moment. And I just say, if anybody has any questions, if anybody wants, I'm willing to stick around after the bell rings, before I head home. If anybody wants to come up and ask me questions. He didn't come up to me, so I have no idea if there was any issues or what happened, but I am dying to know how many he threw down and flushed down the toilet.
I wonder if that was my little brother, because he had that problem and there was a plumber called. Yep. Kathleen Hama, thank you so much. You are a joy. I am so glad that we got to spend this time together. I know that you are admirably fighting off a cold, so I do appreciate you spending some time here with me today. If folks want to get a little bit more of you, go watch your videos, go consume your content, where can they do that online?
Awesome. So yes, so I'm on YouTube. That's where I do the bulk of my content. I put out a video every week, and that's really where, if people have questions, I like to answer the questions and dive into the information a little bit more in depth on YouTube. So Kathleen Hama is my YouTube channel. And then of course I'm on social medias and I'm on Instagram, I'm on TikTok, but TikTok is kind of, I think where a lot more people are at.
Yeah.
So you can find me on TikTok at the Kathleen Hama. And I'd love to have you there. I do like really, TikTok's the short videos. Like I do keep them short. And then, you know, if you actually need more information on how to have that talk, you go to my YouTube and that's where I give you scripts. Like I give parents, you can say something to the effect of blah, 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 blah. And this is how I would say it if I was having this conversation. So yeah, so there, yep, Kathleen Hama. And then of course, I have my website, kathleenhama.com, that, parents can go if they want to have a one-on-one talk with me about a specific problem or issue or anything.
Well, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Thanks, Dawn. I'm so excited. This was really fun.
And that is going to do it for this episode of Head on Fire. Once again, my thanks to my guest, Kathleen Hama. I do think that you all should go immediately and subscribe to her TikTok and YouTube feeds. They are fantastic. Now, if you like this show and you want to support it, there are a number of ways to help. Consider sharing it with your friends on social media. Doing so, that word of mouth, friend to friend recommendation is the best way to boost this up and to get that organic growth going. You can also like or rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and while you're there, consider leaving a review. Reviews help recommend the show to other listeners like you, and they make the algorithm really happy. If you hate the ads at the beginning and end of the show, consider joining my Patreon on a monthly basis. Patrons receive additional audio and video content, as well as archived episodes, a private Discord server, and fun little goodies sprinkled throughout. Sign up at patreon.com/headonfirepod. If you'd like to connect with me on social media for whatever reason, as we watch all of social media crash and burn at the end of 2022, you can do so at headonfirepod. I am on Instagram and TikTok and still on Twitter. Going strong. It's fun there. Anyways, thank you all so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for downloading and streaming the show. And thanks for telling your friends about it. I'm going to go. But before I do, I always try to do a funny little sign off here at the end of the episode. And this time I was going to go through and read some sort of funny sex ed questions. I found some lists online of different questions that sex ed teachers have gotten. This isn't a question. The student said, "No questions, but I'm scared." And the teacher said, "You should be." So, there you go. Have a good day. Bye now.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.